Reza, let me tell you something. I have got the perfect body for podcasting. Hello and welcome to episode 35 of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. If you're listening for the first time, welcome. En Inglés Podcast intentamos mejorar tu inglés y subirlo al siguiente nivel. En este episodio tenemos en gramática clauses, phrases and sentences, pronunciation of the words bear, beard and beer, and vocabulary in the home, particularly the lounge, the living room, el salón. You can find more podcasts at inglespodcasts.com and study English free at mentioningles.com. So here I am with my good friend Reza. Hello Reza, how's it going?
Hi Craig, how are you?
I'm very well, how's it going?
Great.
Good to see you again.
You too.
We have some news. I said in the last episode that we have a new podcast theme on the website. It's the same website, inglespodcast.com, but there is a new design. And some of you, some of the listeners wrote and said that it was difficult with some episodes to download, descargar the MP3 file. That is now fixed. So you can play the episodes in a new window, you can read the show notes at the same time as listening, and you can download the episodes to your computer. Just do a right click, click derecha, and save, guardar como, save as MP3 file. You can save that file to your computer, you can put it on a CD, put it on your MP3 player, and take it with you in the car or when you go running.
Is that for all episodes now, Craig?
Yes, there was a problem with episodes 28, 29, 30 and 31. It has now been fixed, so you can download those episodes in MP3. And thank you to the listeners who wrote and told me about the problem. We have some feedback, Reza, from Mara. And Mara says, "Hi, Craig. Hi, Reza. I've just listened to your 30th episode. In July and September, I listened to all the others. I've laughed a lot, and very important, I have improved my English. Mm-hmm. You are the bee's knees." Mm-hmm. Do you remember that we spoke
about...
Yeah,
we taught that expression, didn't we?
Yeah, the bee's knees. How would we describe somebody who's the best of the best?
The best of the best, yeah.
Yeah.
In Spanish, they say not the... El mejor del mejor, o lo mejor del mejor.
That's right.
Same, yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, I just thought of another one. Crème de la crème.
Crème de la crème.
We've stolen that one from French into English.
That's right. So Mara says, thanks for answering my questions. Well, thank you, Mara, for writing to us. And I think I know you. I think you're from Valencia, and I think you came to the British Council a couple of times for some help with your writing, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I'm thinking of a different Mara, but if it's you, hello and thanks for writing. Another piece of feedback from Marian. "Hi, I only write to express my satisfaction for this podcast. It's very useful to understand some aspects of grammar that could be unclearly."
Unclearly, she says. That's not right, is it?
Could be unclear.
Unclear. It needs to be an adjective, not an adverb, right?
That's right. Yeah, it needs to be an adjective. So that could be unclear. "For me, it's always very difficult to remember the difference between I've been and I've gone." "I've been and I've gone. Would you mind explaining, please? Thanks a lot, Marianne."
How would you explain it, Craig?
How would I explain I've been and I've gone? Well... briefly, quickly, concisely, I would say that I've been is I went and I returned. And I've gone, I went, and I am still there. Estoy todavía ahí. For example, if you phone a company to speak to Mr. Reza, and Mr. Reza's secretary says, "I'm sorry, Mr. Reza has gone to lunch. He is not in the office." But if I say to the secretary, "Have you been to lunch?" She said, "Yes, I went and I came back. I went at 12 o'clock and I have returned.
So she's not at lunch now.
So she's not at lunch now.
Mr. Reza, he's at lunch now because he's gone.
He's having a liquid lunch.
maybe.
Have you ever had a liquid lunch?
No, I can't say I have.
When I worked in insurance, a liquid lunch was the name for going to the pub and drinking lots of beer with your clients and your boss. A beer lunch.
I think that's a fantastic description. I think that is sums it up. There's no more you need to know, really.
I've gone.
Just one thing, though. I would add that you've got to be careful then with the verb to go when it's present perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Because present perfect, as we've mentioned before, I believe, in earlier episodes, the present perfect is have or has plus the past participle.
Right.
So if you want to form the present perfect of eat with I, you say I have eaten. If you want to do it with she has eaten. Okay. Travel with we have traveled, or they have traveled. Okay. But then with the verb to go, precisely because, Marianne, people confuse been and gone, you must convert the verb go to been if you've returned. That's where the tricky one is. So even if the infinitive you're using is to go, if you've gone and you've returned, as Craig said earlier, that's when you have to change it to been. So you don't use the past participle of go, is gone.
Mm-hmm.
If you've returned, you've got to change it.
That's right. So it can get a bit tricky.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, Marianne, for your question. Moving on to grammar, and I believe we're going to speak about clauses, English clauses, phrases and sentences, and the difference between those things, which can be confusing, I think.
Yes, I'm afraid so. I'm the first person to admit it's not the most interesting topic on earth to talk about, but it's important. You know, we can't always do just the fun things. We've got to do things which are a little bit dry, you know, not much humor in them, but you've got to understand them. So what is a clause? What's a phrase? What's a sentence? Well, when Spanish people hear the word phrase, a lot of them think wrongly. They think, oh, phrase. Oh, that must be frase in Spanish. But it's not. Phrase isn't frase in Spanish. Craig, do you know how to say una frase in English?
A sentence.
Right. So this word phrase is a false friend for many Spanish people. They think it's going to translate as una frase because it sounds similar, but it actually isn't. A sentence is una frase. A sentence is beginning with a capital letter and ending with a full stop. Sentence, frase. So what is a phrase then? Well,
can you translate phrase to Spanish? Because it's probably in the dictionary, it's probably frase as well, isn't it?
I'm not sure it is, no. You know, don't think I haven't been asked this many times and I keep getting conflicting answers. I'm not quite sure. I'm not going to attempt to do so because I'm not an expert in Spanish grammar. All I will say is in English, a phrase is a part of a sentence.
Right.
But not a complete sentence. However, there's another word which is clause. Now, a clause, C-L-A-U-S-E, is also a part of a sentence. So why do we have two words for part of a sentence? Well, because they're not the same.
Yeah, there must be a difference, surely, between a phrase and a clause.
Yeah, well, what's the difference for you, Craig, between a phrase and a clause? If they're both parts of sentences, why do we have two different words?
Well, isn't it that a phrase in English does not contain a subject and a verb? So it cannot communicate a complete thought.
Right.
So, but a clause does contain a subject and a verb, and it can convey a complete idea. Maybe we can give the listeners some examples.
Okay. Okay. Let's think of a sentence. What about this complete sentence? A lovely girl sat next to me in the cafe yesterday.
Right.
Full stop. So there's a sentence. It begins with a capital letter, a blah, 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 blah. And then after the last word, yesterday, full stop, or as the Americans say, period. Yeah, punto. That's a sentence. Now we can divide that sentence. We could look at the words a lovely girl. A lovely girl. Well, a, that's an article. A or an or the, words like that. Lovely, that's an adjective. Girl is a noun, it's a person. A lovely girl. There's no subject verb there.
There's no verb in
there. There's no verb, yeah. That's a phrase then. It's a group of words which clearly go together and form part of a sentence, but there's no subject verb. That's a phrase.
So if I extend it a little and I say a lovely girl sat next to me, then I have a verb and an object and a subject.
Exactly. So a lovely girl sat next to me, that is a clause because we've got a subject with a verb. The subject is a lovely girl. The subject can be more than one word. In this case, it's three words, a lovely girl. And we got a verb, sat. We got other words as well, next to me, but they're not really relevant when you're defining the basic necessities to form a clause, which are subject, verb. If you've got a subject, verb, you got a clause. Mm-hmm. You could have other words as well, like next to me, or not, depends. You might even have an object. For example, I thought. That could be a clause. I thought. Got a subject. We got a verb. We could say, I thought, subject, verb. Or we could say, I thought about you. With the preposition about and the indirect object, you. So we got an indirect object now. Okay. Maybe. Sometimes there's an object in a clause. But sometimes not. The only thing you need is a subject and verb. Then you got a clause.
So if I go back to the original sentence, if I say a lovely girl, that's a phrase. Sat next to me is another phrase, a separate phrase.
Yes.
In the cafe yesterday, another phrase. So three phrases in the same sentence.
Exactly, yeah. If we join two of those phrases, a lovely girl sat next to me, we got one clause because then we got a subject, a lovely girl, going with a verb, sat. You've got to have the subject and the verb, usually, for a clause. Now, why do you need to know this? Well, if you're a Spanish speaker, you see, you don't have to have a subject in a clause. Vivo en Valencia. I live in Valencia. It's a short sentence. I live is a clause. We've got a subject verb. I live. But in Spanish, we said vivo. Where's the subject? Well, yo vivo, but you don't have to say yo in Spanish.
Right, because the suffix at the end, the o, indicates that it's the first person speaking.
Exactly. So vivo is a clause in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in English, it doesn't count as a clause. In English, there's got to be at least two words because you need a subject and a verb. In Spanish, a clause can be one word. In Spanish, you don't have to say yo. You don't have to say the subject. So that's the main difference. Which is why some Spanish speakers, understandably, sometimes forget to say the subject with the verb in English. Because for them, they form the clause in their mind. It's okay. But in English, you haven't if you haven't put the subject with the verb.
And I see those mistakes, particularly in the writing. It's not so noticeable in spoken English.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of my students make that mistake when they're writing, that they do forget the subject. And
here's another one. I was very surprised when she asked me for my mobile number. How could you break up that sentence into parts, Craig?
Well, I was, would be one part, very surprised when she asked me for my mobile number.
You could do it that way, yeah. So I was, it's got a subject and a verb. So that's a clause, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
There's another clause here, though. When she asked me for my mobile number, we could put that all together. Oh, you broke it up, but it doesn't really matter. That's the thing. You can have clause with just the bare minimum or with extra words. When she asked, that's a clause. When she asked me, that's a clause. When she asked me for my mobile number, that's a clause.
Mm-hmm.
You can break it up any way you like, as long as it's got a subject and a verb.
Right.
Okay. In this case, when she asked me for my mobile number, we've got, when she asked me, that's an indirect object, For my mobile number, we got a direct object as well. We got an indirect and a direct object here. But all that is, you know, extra stuff. It's not the main point here.
Okay, let me add to that sentence, and you can break it up into clauses or phrases. Mm-hmm. Which I quickly wrote down on the back of an old bus ticket.
Okay, so can you repeat the whole sentence, please?
I was very surprised when she asked me for my mobile number, which I quickly wrote down on the back of an old bus ticket.
Well, as I said before, there are many ways to break it up into different phrases and clauses. But here's one possibility. You could say, I was. You could say, very surprised. You could say, when she asked. You could say, me for my mobile number. You could say, which I quickly wrote down. Then you could have on the back of an old bus ticket.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one way of breaking up. There are lots of ways. There are lots of ways. But I'm going to break it up an easier way. I'm going to have not so many breaks. So what about this? I was very surprised. Let's call that one clause. I've decided to put very surprised with the subject and verb. I can do that.
But it's not a sentence yet. I was very surprised. It's not a sentence.
Not a sentence, no. I was very surprised. And then, when she asked me for my mobile number, I'm going to call that another clause. We got two clauses there. I was very surprised. That was our first clause. Then, when she asked me for my mobile number, that's another clause. And then we have a third clause, which I quickly wrote down on the back of an old bus ticket. Let's divide it into just three parts. We got three clauses there. This is a very interesting sentence because the main clause is I was very surprised. If you think about it, of the three pieces of information, the three clauses, that's probably the most important. I was very surprised. That's the main clause, the principal clause. But then we got the next one. When she asked me for my mobile number, that's a time clause. When? When plus a time. When was I very surprised? When she asked me for my mobile number. That's when. It's a time clause. In fact, it's a subordinate clause. It's not the main clause. The main clause is I was very surprised. That's the most important piece of information. When she asked me for my mobile number is other information, but it's not quite as important. It's a subordinate clause. And then we got another clause, which I quickly wrote down on the back of an old bus ticket, beginning with the word which. Now, when you see a clause introduced by the word which, see, relative clauses often, not always, relative clauses often begin with the words which, or who, or that, or sometimes whose, or where. Although sometimes they don't begin with those words, but we'll talk about that another day, because that's another story. So here we got a relative clause, which I quickly wrote down on the back of an old bus ticket. That relative clause describes my mobile number. It's extra information about my mobile number. What about my mobile number? Well, I wrote it down on the back of an old bus ticket. It's extra information about my mobile number. It's relative to my mobile number, which is why it's called a relative clause. So just a quick recap then. The first clause, I was very surprised, is the main clause. It's the most important piece of information. When she asked me for my mobile number is a subordinate clause. It depends on the main clause. And then the last clause, which I quickly wrote down on the back of an old bus ticket, is a relative clause. It's relative information. It's extra information about my mobile number. Three types of clauses in one sentence.
So if we join some of these clauses together to make sentences, we'd have something like, a lovely girl sat next to me in the cafe yesterday while I was having my usual breakfast of coffee and chocolate cake. I was very surprised when she asked me for my mobile number, which I quickly wrote down on the back of an old bus ticket. So there we have two sentences. Joining those clauses together.
Exactly. The first one you said, can you repeat the first sentence? You just said?
A lovely girl sat next to me in the cafe yesterday while I was having my usual breakfast of coffee and chocolate cake.
Yeah, we could divide that one into just two long clauses if we like. The first one, a lovely girl sat next to me in the cafe yesterday. That's the main clause. It's the most important piece of information. Of course, the girl sat next to me. That's the most important thing. And then another clause, the second part of the sentence, while I was having my usual breakfast of coffee and chocolate cake, that's a subordinate clause. It's a clause of time. It's not so important. The main idea is the girl sat next to me. That's the most important part.
Do you know which clause you can only really say at the end of December?
I think I can guess. Santa Claus?
That's right.
I saw that coming, Craig. I saw that coming.
And do you know the name of those little people, the elves that help Santa Claus with wrapping the presents and delivering the presents to the children? The helpers?
The helpers, yeah.
Do you know what they're called?
Santa's little helpers?
Subordinate clauses.
Oh, right. Very good. Very good. No, I didn't see that one coming. You got me there.
Okay, remember you can find these sentences, and if you're a little confused with Razor's explanation, I don't think you are.
I don't blame you. I'm not surprised.
It was very, very clear and very, very concise. But you can go to inglespodcast.com and see the show notes, las notas de episodio. Moving on to pronunciation, and I thought I'd look at three words which can be confusing for Spanish speakers, and these three words were mentioned to me by a good friend when I went out for dinner a few weeks ago. He said, how can I know the difference between bear, oso, beard, barba, and beer, cerveza? Because many Spanish speakers can't hear the difference, and when they try to say one of these words, it would sound like the other two. So let's look at the vowel sounds of each word. The first one, oso, bear, is e-e, bear, like stare or fair or care. Or can you think of another one?
Fair.
Fair. E-e, air. Now, beer is a different vowel sound. It's ear, like your ear, oreja, ear, beer. Or hear, escuchar, hear, beer. And beard is exactly the same with a D at the end. So, beer, cerveza, beard, barba. Usually, the difference of between these three words is very clear from the context. It's very unusual to confuse it. If you say, for example, look, there's a beer.
You confuse me now.
So look, be careful. There's a bear behind you. It's probably not a cerveza and it's probably not a barba. So it's very clear. I like the beard you've grown on your face. It's not going to be a bear, and it's not going to be a beer. Okay? So once again, I'll repeat those words, and if you repeat them with me or after me and practice them at home. Bear, bear. Beard, beard. Beer, beer. Okay.
Craig, can I ask you a question?
Would you pronounce them the same way as I did? Because we've had differences in the past. Do you agree with that?
No. Well, I'll talk about that in a minute, but I just want to throw a spanner in the works first of all.
You better explain throw a spanner in the works.
To throw a spanner in the works
is llave inglesa, no?
Yeah, that's what it is, but it's just an expression. If you can imagine a spanner, a llave inglesa, getting caught in a machine in the works, going to cause a big problem, right? So it's like, what is it? I don't know the expression in Spanish. Don't know if there is expression. I'm sure there is. It just means...
Mariar el perdiz.
Ah, that's it. That's exactly it. Mariar la perdiz.
Mariar la perdiz.
Yeah, that's it. That's the very expression. I've heard that before.
Confuse the partridge.
Yeah. So throw a spanner in the works. I'm going to throw a spanner in the works here, Craig, by asking you to pronounce the word. I'll spell it for you. B-A-R-E.
Bear.
Aha. Pronounced exactly the same as B-E-A-R.
Bear. Exactly the same.
Same pronunciation.
And that's very, very common in English to have a different spelling with the same pronunciation. But again, it would be clear in the context.
And what does B-A-R-E, bare, mean?
It could be sin ropa. It could be
nude, naked,
without clothes. The expressions like, for example, the bare facts would be solo los hechos. I'm going to tell you only the bare facts, the bare truth. So there are lots of collocations with bare, B-A-R-E. Can you think of any more?
To bear all.
To bear all, to reveal everything, to show everything. Yeah, I'm going to bear all.
Could be by taking all your clothes off,
It could be by taking all your clothes off. It could be by...
Craig, don't do it. Remember, we don't want to get an over 18 certificate.
Reza, let me tell you something. I have got the perfect body for podcasting.
Oh, that's true.
Not for video, for podcasting, because nobody can see it. I've lost my train of thought. So
you were going to ask me how I say these words. Yeah, because I'm a provincial boy, you know, I grew up in the sticks in the middle of nowhere and I don't
in
talk
the bare countryside.
The bare countryside, yeah. I don't talk this Oxford English BBC received pronunciation. I'm afraid I do not, and I'm unrepentant, listeners.
Are you suggesting that I speak like a BBC person?
No, not you necessarily, no, but you're closer to it than I am because you're from the southeast of England and so... You are closer, although I wouldn't say you speak BBC English, but you're closer to it than me. At least you're English, which I'm not.
I've never thought about it, but I've always thought because if I'm from the south of London or the southeast, then Essex is not typically known for being the Queen's English area.
Well, that's true. Yeah, it's not, but it is closer than a Belfast accent to it. Mm. It's closer to, for example, final R's.
Yes.
Like the word B-E-E-R, cerveza. Beer. I would say beer. For me, there is an R sound in it.
Say it again.
Beer.
Beer.
I'm putting quite a lot of R.
Yeah, you do. You put in an R sound. Beer.
In all of them, in fact. B-E-A-R also, bear. Quite a lot of R sound. And B-E-A-R-D, barba, beard. So... For people from Ireland, all of us, not just me, all of us from Ireland, and people from Scotland, and people from the United States and Canada, put in an R sound in all of those words. In fact, if you look up the pronunciation of those words in an American dictionary, they'll put in an R sound. Whereas in an Oxford English dictionary, they don't, because an American accent's different. And a Northern Irish accent is kind of somewhere between an American and an English accent as regards the pronunciation of the letter R. I would say more of an R than you.
Yes, I think you're right. Absolutely. And I hadn't noticed that before.
And Craig, tell me, you've been there. I haven't. But I've met plenty of Australians. You've been to Australia. As far as I understand, in an Australian accent, they would make even less R sound than an English speaker. Person. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. In fact, there are some... That's right. And there are some... There's very wide open sounds in Australian English.
You say the English word. I don't want to lead you on. So say the word in English, coche.
In English?
Yeah.
Car.
Whereas in Australia, might say car.
Yeah.
Even less R sound.
That's right.
No hint of it. Car in Australia. And you say...
Car.
And I say car.
Yeah, there's definitely more R sound. There's a progression there. Absolutely. Yep. Moving on to vocabulary. And this week I thought we could talk about in the home. Vocabulary connected to the house or home or flat, particularly in the lounge or the living room. Is there a difference in Spanish between the lounge and the living room? El salón, would that be... Both?
Oh, Craig, you could open a Pandora's box here, la caja de Pandora. I would never say lounge myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that a London word?
I don't know if it's London, whatever. I think it's just habit. I'm not sure it's necessarily
Would you say living room?
Yeah, I'd always say living room. But it doesn't really mean anything. I mean, there's people who probably live in the same street as me who would say lounge. I think it just depends what you learnt as a kid. Yeah. But there are many ways of saying salón de estar.
Yeah.
Some people say living room. Some people say lounge. Some people say drawing room and other things.
That's right. When I was growing up in a suburb of London, we had a house where my dad knocked down the wall separating the dining room and the living room or lounge. So we had like a huge kind of through, well, not huge, but a rather big sort of room that was long. But we still called the dining room the part with the table where you had lunch and dinner. Mm-hmm. And the lounge was the part with the TV and the comfortable chairs. So we still made that distinction. Where's my book? Oh, it's in the dining room on the table, or it's in the lounge on the chair. So we still had that distinction.
You've spent more time than I have in the United States. What would Americans call that room?
I'm not sure.
Salon de estar.
I'm not sure.
Living room, lounge, drawing room, something else maybe?
I know that they often have a room down, yes, both of those, but in the room below the house, down in what I would call the basement, they usually have a room with a TV and comfortable chairs where they'd send the children to go with their friends or to watch TV, and they call that the den. Mm-hmm. That's quite common in America. We don't say that in Britain. So the mm-hmm. den would be a separate area where the children would play video games or be with their friends. But yeah, I would say in America, I will check it and put this in the show notes, but I would say living room mm-hmm. or possibly lounge, or as you say, I think drawing room though is quite British English. I think drawing room...
British English, and there would class come into it?
Yeah,
Isn't quite a middle or upper class thing to
I
say
agree.
drawing room?
I think we've never had a drawing room in any of the houses we've lived in.
Me neither, too poor to have one.
Yeah.
A drawing room can be exactly the same size, shape and form as a living room, but different class.
Yeah, different
class.
Different class of people. So, By the way,
what about a parlor? Ever been in a parlor in the United States? It's very southern United States. Come on, y'all, let's talk in the parlor.
Is that the area, an extension of the living room that's often glut with glass walls so you can see the garden? Is that a parlor?
Might be. I'm not quite sure. It's something I associate with the southern United States, not the north of the United States. They seem to hang about chatting in parlors down there.
Interesting. So if I said the word carpet to you, now this is something that confuses me. The difference in Spanish between carpet and a rug, because a carpet is from one wall to another wall. It's all over the floor. Now, that's very common in Britain, and I'm sure in Northern Ireland, mm-hmm. That you'd have fitted carpet. But a rug is a small piece of carpet that sits usually in the middle of the room.
Which you can move, you can lift,
you can
and
move
put and wherever you like.
Exactly. It mm-hmm. doesn't go from one wall to the other wall. It's right. not completely covering the floor. So I always thought, and tell me if you agree, that alfombra was rug and moqueta, carpet.
Yes, as far as I know it is.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Because a couple of online dictionaries that I checked did not agree. Mm. Some put the translation of rug as moqueta.
Well, Craig, aprender inglés con Resi Craig, being such a multicultural, multinational, huge operation, we have to take into account that we got lots of South American as well as Spanish from Spain listeners. Who knows, maybe there are differences between South America and Spain as regards to Spanish. But I wouldn't be surprised.
That's true.
I know that in Valencia, when a Valencian talks about moqueta, they mean carpet. And when they say alfombra,
they mean rug.
I know that for sure in Valencia. Don't ask me about Ecuador or Argentina or Peru. I'm not sure.
Maybe that's the difference with Latin America have a different name.
Thing is, of course, in all of these countries, be it South America or Spain, you don't have many carpets, in fact.
No, because, it's very unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, most of these countries are warm a lot of the year. Not all of them, but most of them. So you just don't need a carpet. But in Britain and Ireland and a lot of the United States, Canada, you need carpet, moqueta, covering your whole floor. Or you'll be freezing in winter.
If you don't put your slippers on when you get out of bed.
Yeah.
Curtains are a lot easier to explain because cortinas, obviously, are curtains. Do you have curtains in your flat?
Not in Valencia, and I know very few people who do. Mm. It's more blinds here, isn't it?
That's right. Persianas, blinds. Mm.
You could even say Persian blind, but people usually don't say the word Persian. But you can. Mm-hmm. Persiana, Persian blind.
Persian blind, exactly. Mm-hmm. Radiator. or radiator, as you might say, or radiator, as I say.
Radiator? Come on, Craig. I'm not George W. Bush.
No,
come
but
on.
It's got an R. It's got an R.
I ain't George W. Bush. I ain't from Texas, boy. I'm from Belfast.
It's got an R at the end of it.
Radiator.
It finishes with an R.
But I don't say radiator. I say radiator.
Radiate?
No, I wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't say that.
Why did I change the stress?
You'd stress.
I'd say radiator.
You'd stress the first syllable. Yeah,
but I wouldn't say or at the end. I'd say radiator.
Radiator.
But I'd say more R than you. So, Craig, how would you describe your lounge or living room or drawing room?
Well, there's a sofa.
Not a settee? Do you remember that old word, settee?
My parents used settee, but I think that's a word that's dying. It's dying out.
I was brought up saying settee.
Did you? You said settee?
I never said sofa when I was a kid.
What about couch? Did you say couch?
No. Couch sounds kind of posh to me. Mm-hmm. It's either posh or you find it in a psychologist's clinic.
That's right. Yeah. Lay on the couch and tell me about your childhood.
When I was a kid, settee. S-E-T-T-E. But that word's fallen out of use now, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's not at all popular.
It's not as common. So sofa or couch. Cushion, cojín. Mm-hmm. Bookcase, biblioteca.
What have you got up in your walls?
Pictures, and I've got a nice material that's been hand woven. A lovely piece of material that I picked up on one of my travels. A few pictures, there's a sofa, a nice comfortable armchair, there's a desk area.
Bookcases.
I've got a few bookcases with books inside.
A set of drawers. As you would say drawers, I suppose, and I would say drawers with more R.
Set of drawers.
You say potato, I say patata, Craig.
So tell me about your tell me about your house that you grew up in, not where your mum lives now.
Well, there was a settee or sofa. But it was a settee when I was growing up in 1970s. Settee is a very 1970s word.
Did you have a coffee table?
Yes, we had a coffee table, yeah. That's dying out of dying away as well now, isn't it?
You don't have those very often in Valencia, in Spain. No. Coffee tables. A table, usually quite large, actually. Yeah. Usually quite big, but very low. Low to the ground. Put, like, usually a bowl of fruit or some flowers or a box of chocolates and some cups and saucers on.
And you had to call it a coffee table, even if you never drank coffee. Yeah. Even if you drank water, juice or tea, it had to be called a coffee table.
You wouldn't say tea table.
No, there's no such thing as a tea table, no. We had that and pretty much all the things you've just described. We had curtains, which I don't know in Spain.
Did you have two kinds of curtains? Did you have net curtains that were quite fine and you could see through and then drapes, that the American word would be drapes.
Exactly.
That you couldn't see through, that blocked the sun.
Exactly. Yeah. We had both, yeah.
We did too.
And we had something I'm sure you did as well, very important in the UK, a fireplace.
We didn't have a fireplace.
Oh, okay.
Was it a real fire?
No, it wasn't.
With a chimney?
Well, actually, no, it was a real fire. Beg your pardon. It was a real fire, but it wasn't an open fire. Now, this is something which probably isn't very familiar to people who haven't lived in Europe, particularly the UK or Ireland. You can have a real fire in your living room, as we did, but it wasn't an open fire. It was a real fire, burning things, and the smoke went up the chimney, but it was closed over with a door. You opened and closed the door. So it was a real fire, a coal fire, but it wasn't an open fire. It was a glass-fronted fire.
I remember, though. Did you heat the water with that?
We heated the water and the radiators. It was our only form of heat.
Yeah.
And it was coal-fueled.
Carbon.
Yep. And out in our back garden, we had, in fact, we still do have, a coal bunker.
To keep the coal, yeah.
To keep
and
the
man
coal
used to come around the streets with sacks of coal.
That's right, the coal man.
The coal man.
And these men would always be black from head to foot.
Yeah.
From all the dust, which is called soot.
And it's very bad for your lungs. If you breathe that dust in, you can give yourself bronchitis and all sorts of
Most of those
diseases.
Coal men coughed all the time.
And smoked.
Yeah, which didn't help. They probably died by the time they were 50 or 60. And when I was a kid, quite often it was my job to go out and get the coal. especially in the winter. You know, my parents were enjoying themselves, relaxing at home, nice and warm. Why go out and get cold going into the garden to get the coal from the coal bunker? Send me out. So off they did. I had to go out into the cold, open the door of the coal bunker, some coal on a shovel, come back, open the fire, put it in. And I was in big trouble if any of that coal fell on the carpet. Big, big trouble, because it would make a terrible mess. Not drop any, open the fire, get it in quick, close the fire, go out again, etc.
Did they send you up the chimney to clean that?
Oh, come on. We're not talking Mary Poppins now. Chimney.
You didn't clean the chimney.
No, not quite.
Did you have a sideboard?
No, we didn't.
We had a sideboard. A sideboard is a long piece of furniture along one wall that you'd keep your maybe best plates or your best cutlery, your knives and forks and spoons. And on one side of the sideboard, we had our glasses and our booze, our drink, our liqueurs and our whiskey and brandy and gin. So the sideboard was this huge piece of furniture along with the side of one wall with these things when we had guests. And we used to use it for... You didn't have one of those?
We didn't. No. Craig, I had such a Victorian Dickensian life of poverty as a kid. We didn't even have a dining room.
Bringing in the coal and cleaning the chimney, you must have been terrible.
Yeah. No dining room. We ate in the kitchen. Yeah. Our kitchen also had a table in it where we didn't have a separate dining room. That was and still is quite common in the UK to have a fairly big kitchen. So it doubles up as a dining room as well. You don't have a separate dining room. You just eat in the kitchen.
Okay, well, I think we've run out of time, unfortunately. So thank you for listening. Thank you very much, Reza. And remember, you can send us an email or a sound file, if you like, mensaje de voz en MP3, and you can make a comment or a question and send your comments and questions to craig@inglespodcast.com or belfastreza@gmail.com. And I'd like to leave you with two questions. If you do get in touch and write to us, please tell us how you found our show and also what you would like us to talk about on the show. So if you do write and send us a note or question, it would be great if you could answer those two questions. How did you find the show? And what would you like us to talk about in future episodes? Remember, you can find more episodes to improve your English at inglespodcast.com. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later, licensed by Creative Commons under a by NC license at ccmixter.org. So until next episode, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
See you next episode.
See you later.
You can now leave us a voice message on the homepage at inglespodcast.com. Just click the orange button and leave your message, which should be no longer than 90 seconds.